Regurgitator were one of the biggest bands in Australian music in the 90s. They were daring and different, which is just what the 90s called for. They had massive hit singles, critical acclaim, and some dated 3D graphics. But beneath it hid a new attitude. It was anti-corporate and anti-bullshit. How the hell did this stuff get on a major label, and how did it smash through conservative commercial radio? Welcome to Just Ace, a podcast about the Australian alternative music scene. Whatever the hell that means. This week, we look at Regurgitator. Brisbane in the 90s became an important source of bands. Just going by numbers, it is the third biggest city in Australia. But it was crawling with zero major label A&R men. As a generation picked up guitars in the wake of Nirvana, there was talent to be found everywhere, and there was a lot coming from Brisbane. Brisbane has always been an interesting city. They had produced their fair share of talent over the decades. But everyone moves away to make it. The Go-Betweens moved, Tex Perkins moved, the Saints moved, even the Bee Gees moved. But the new national Triple J made the country feel smaller than ever. The major labels started sending A&R people to Brisbane to check out what's going on. One thing that was going on was Valve Records, founded by Paul Curtis. It was a Brisbane label that worked with Brisbane bands. Warner's new head of A&R, Michael Parisi, looked at the label for a potential distribution deal. But one band was interesting. They were a three-piece doing something different. They were called, not Regurgitator, but Pangaea. Pangaea was fronted by Ben Eli with Dave Atkins and Jim Sinclair. They were one of the bigger bands in the Brisbane scene in the early 90s with their wild and bizarre version of funky punk. But big in Brisbane was still pretty underground. Warner Music were interested and wanted to hear more from Pangaea and, hey, let's have a listen to other bands on Valve. So Curtis gave Warner's a tape. Pangaea recordings on one side and an interesting side project of Eli's that would be signed to Valve in the event of a label deal. That side project was called Regurgitator. Parisi listened to the tape and had a problem. He now wanted to sign Regurgitator instead. It was awful for the Pangaea guys, but that's how easily it could have not happened for Regurgitator. If one person didn't decide to flip a tape. Regurgitator started in late 1993 as a laugh and a jam. This was Brisbane and bands were formed for fun and not ambition. You don't get signed in Brisbane, right? If you were serious, you would have moved to Sydney already. Ben Eli was friends with punk drummer Martin Lee. They met Kwan Yeomans, who was also a drummer but had ideas for songs. So whatever, they jammed and put stuff together. They were friends with lots of other people in the Brisbane scene, and they all played in other bands. They even shared a rehearsal studio with some young upstarts named Powderfinger. This was the 90s, and a band could start as a laugh in late 1993, sign a major label deal and record an EP in 1994, and then release that EP as their major label debut by February of 1995. There was no painful period of doing demos or crafting something for radio. They just released some of the first songs they had, and they sent it to Triple J, and they played it. Right from the start, the music was diverse and genre-hopping. There'd be fast punky rock, and there'd be hip-hop and rap. They were part Beastie Boys, part Blur, part Bowie. The band didn't have a sound. They were three young creative guys still working it out. But always front and centre was bigger ideas. And often those big ideas was the star of the show beyond their excellent musicianship. The first EP by Regurgitator was self-titled and released in 1995. It featured the song, I Like It Like That. It had one of the weirdest film clips of the era, just the three guys in a shower. It was shown at a Warner conference and the staff were apparently horrified. Here's I Like It Like That by Regurgitator.
Sells a truth vendor. I love a plastic gender, return me to sender.
It's made even weirder knowing it's a major label release. But Warners were looking to get into the alternative game. With no track record to protect, they were willing to give Regurgitator a lot of creative freedom. They also didn't expect big things from the band, well, at least not yet. The Regurgitator EP had a hamburger on the cover, and it would become known as the Hamburger EP. It was typical of how the band liked to play around with commercialism in their artwork. The EP was engineered by Lachlan Gould, who went by the name Magoo. It would be the start of a long collaboration. Regurgitator were pretty good for the times. They tapped into an audience open to weird and wonderful sounds of alternative rock. And they were great live, which was important in the 90s. And with Warner's support, they went on tour and got a major label promotional push. Quan Yeomans would later say that he felt uncomfortable signing to a major label. As a teenager, he travelled with his dad to the World Economic Forum in Rio de Janeiro. There, he was exposed to the world of global politics and the unfairness of third world debt. Signing a deal with a multinational ran counter to how he saw the world. But signing to major labels was what big indie bands were doing in the mid-90s. And for the band, who were promised creative control, they thought they could change things from within. Their second EP, released 6 months after the first, was called New. Again, playing around with commercialism imagery, the EP just had the word New on it like a sticker promoting some disposable home product. It featured Blubber Boy, a song about an old Eskimo tale. It was poppy and fun, mixed with rude swearing. It was probably the most pop they sounded up to that point. It made number 17 in the Hottest 100 of 1995. Here's Blubber Boy by Regurgitator.
I'm your blubber boy, you should love me. I look like your love, drown in the sea. I'm fishing in the sun, I'm melting. Run me on your gun, I'll come back again. I'm your blubber boy, you should love me. The sun beat me down too viciously. I fell into the ground while I used to be. I'm melting away, I'm nothing again. I'm your blubber boy, you should love me. I'm melting away.
The follow-up to New was a limited edition single called FSO, which was short for Fuck Shit Off. It was a 90-second hardcore song in the middle of 17 minutes of feedback. They didn't even want to put their name on it. The band at this point were just enjoying being in a band and pushing the boundaries. That pushing continued on their debut album. A lot of Australian bands were travelling overseas to record at this point. It gave the albums a marketing hook and a bit of mystique. It also gave them some gravitas, you know, working with some big-name producer. Regurgitator took the offer from Warners to record overseas, but they did something different. First, no big American producers, they did it themselves with the help of Magoo. And instead of going to LA or the UK or some prestigious studio, they went to Thailand. The studio was in the rundown outskirts of Bangkok, but the studio itself was good, with good facilities, a good sound desk and recording to tape. It was owned by an artist signed to Warner Music Thailand, and it was actually cheaper to record in Bangkok than Brisbane. So let's talk about the band's Asianness. Quan Yeomans is half Vietnamese, Martin Lee is half Chinese. There's a wonderful story told by Stephanie Beatrice, who starred in the wonderful sitcom Brooklyn Nine-Nine. She auditioned for two roles and then heard another Latina actress, Melissa Fumero, got one of them. And she cried when she heard this, because that was it. No show has two Latina women in the main cast. But then she was cast anyway because she's brilliant, and they never made a point of it. Because having one member of your band be Asian or not white is good. To have a majority of your band not be white was not something that we've seen very much of before. Hard-ons come to mind, but that diversity has never been seen on an Australian major label that I can think of. There was no one like this in the American grunge scene, and the UK was mostly the same, with the exception of the wonderful band Corner Shop. Members of Regurgitator were Asian, and Australia, like it or lump it, sits in Asia. So much of Australia's cultural fabric is built by its British roots and then American soft power. But Australia's economy and politics is dominated by Asia. And of course, I'm Asian. So I took it personally. I love UMI and other bands, but you know, I also love Star Trek. It didn't mean that I thought I could be a transporter officer. But Quan, Martin, along with Rayan from Hard-Ons, were my heroes. There was also Derek Yuen from Underground Lovers and Greg Ng from Snout. I took notice of it all. I never felt racism from other teenagers when I was a teenager. That would come later. And I never felt, you know, extra pressure to support Regurgitator because they were Asian. They were just there, and they were awesome, and they were just another one of these alternative bands that could be our mates if we were a bit older. And it wasn't like there were an Asian band. There was Ben there, and it was a mix. Much like in our schoolyard, there was a mix. But that didn't mean the band whitewashed who they were. The band chose Thailand to record because Martin Lee knew and travelled to that part of the world a bit. The album they made was called Tuplang, the Thai term for jukebox. Two Asian guys in the band and an album with an Asian name. They would also make several film clips shot in Asia whilst on tour. It was who they were, but it also helped them stand out. Tuplang was the perfect name for Regurgitator's debut album because inside it felt like no two songs were the same. The album opened with the song called I Sucked a Lot of Cock to Get Where I Am. The record company did suggest they change the title, but the band said no thanks. It helped that it was, again, a slice of likeable punky pop. They even used harmonies for the first time. Here's I Sucked a Lot of Cock to Get Where I Am by Regurgitator. But elsewhere, there was the intense rap of Social Disaster or the abrasive hardcore punk of FSO, which was just the song bit, no long feedback. Lyrically, they were uncompromising. They attacked social conformity, third world debt, domestic abuse, and the music industry. Both Ben and Kwan sang, but Kwan seemed to sing in several different voices.
As a teenager, this was a challenging record. Let's not pretend for a second that at age 15, I found this album to be comforting or a joy. No, this was abrasive and strange. But Triple J loved them, so I was supposed to buy it and give it a go, right? I listened to it with fascination and grew to love it. And this is alternative culture right here, that I was pushing myself to listen to something new and exposing myself to weirder things. And I was doing it because this band was popular and I was still trying to fit in. It was popular to be weird.
The artwork inside Tuplang was important too. The band loved to play around with that advertising imagery, and they really went to town with the memorable lyric booklet, with images of the band in fake ads and magazine covers. The big single from Tuplang would be Kong Fu Sing. It's lyrically one of the lighter moments, an ode to fortune cookies. It was matched with a film clip shot in Thailand while the band was mixing the record. It made it to number 15 in the Hottest 100 of 1996, and it would be their highest charting single to date at number 33. Here's Regurgitator with Kong Fu Sing.
A kung fu sing with good fortune that it brings. So quit your moping and crack one open. Smiles about the cookie has spoken. The kung fu sing. Yeah, the kung fu sing. The kung fu sing. Yeah, it's the king. The kung fu sing.
Tuplang was released in the UK and the US and Japan. For once, the American label didn't muck around with the track listing. I Sucked a Lot of Cock was released as a single on Sub Pop. They toured the world behind the release. Around this time, Kwan started a relationship with Janet English from Spiderbait. They were members of two of the most successful bands of the era. They were quite the celebrity couple. They were the Joni Mitchell and Graham Nash of the Australian indie rock scene. There's a song on the 1996 Spiderbait album Ivy and the Big Apples called Hot Water and Milk. That phrase is used in a love song that Kwan wrote for Janet. It's a love song that is also a buzzy bit of punk rock. I love the shit out of this song. Here's Miffy Simplicity by Regurgitator.
I sit and wait until that moment arrives. I'm so excited that I tingle inside. She picks me up in that long white car. We go with Kevin and we count all the stars. She drives a cami and it's wide for sound. It feels so sweetly when she puts up or down. Out to the country where the air is fresh. Just to be with her is the part I like best. I see her pale skin shine in the sun. She's got a 15 plus sun buckle on. I can't tell you that our love will be strong. After the borders of noise have gone. We're always planning about running away. So we can be together every day. When she's not here I don't know how I survive. I hurt myself cause I forget I'm alive.
Here's the thing about bands that want to do things differently. Even when they get big, they'll still want to do things differently. I'm not sure anyone expected the band to follow up Tuplang with Tuplang Volume 2, but I don't think anyone expected what they would do next. Especially as the sessions for Regurgitator's second album seemed like it would continue what made Two Plan great, like working again with Magoo. But this time they would record in Brisbane, in their own newly built studio called The Dirty Room. The Dirty Room was something the band wanted to do for a while. Instead of using their advance to hire an expensive studio, they would use that money to buy their own gear. They set it up in a warehouse in Fortitude Valley. By necessity, it would be cheaper and less capable than a professional studio. But it would be theirs and based in Brisbane, so they could take as long as they wanted without costs going up. And they would, in theory, own that studio forever. The first single released from these sessions was called Everyday Formula. It didn't seem far from the Regurgitator we knew. Fast and punky, the only change was the keyboards, which they used in many of their hip-hop tracks anyway. Otherwise, it could have been a hard-on song. Here's Regurgitator with Everyday Formula.
Every day I shit into the sea. It's strange, but it doesn't mean much to me. I'm living in a porcelain dream. And things ain't quite what they say. I try to keep things so nice.
But what the band cooked up in the Dirty Room was going to be very different from what came before. All the hard touring they did after Two Plan, with lots of punk bands at festivals, made the band tire of guitars. There was also the male posturing that went with it. They did an American tour with the US band Helmet, and the aggression of that band and their audience really turned them off. They were also diving deeper into samplers and keyboards. The studio they built was set up only for digital recording and not tape. Embracing the sounds and coldness of digital recording, they made a batch of songs that sounded quite 80s, but a primitive 80s of early synths and simple dance beats. The single released before the album was called Black Bugs, written by Ben. The song was about the haze of being lost in a video game. Like they did with the studio, the band took the video budget and bought computers and 3D software so they can make as many film clips as they wanted. Kwan, along with Janet, would learn how to do simple 3D graphics. The Black Bugs film clip would be made by the pair under the name The Shits. It featured a bunch of animated creatures like the song talks about. It was sort of simple and weird. It was digital punk rock. The pair would make several videos in this style, including some for Spiderbait. Here's Black Bugs by Regurgitator.
I got killed by black bugs on my video game. But then although to myself it doesn't mean too much. I keep dying and dying over and over again. And now I feel I'm alive, so I'll just pretend.
The album Unit was that mix of 80s pop and digital punk rock. A lot was made about how it was an 80s pop pastiche, but 80s pop records don't sound this raw and weird. Gone were those fierce guitars. The raps were pared back. The jump from the EPs to Two Plan was big, but it felt like an evolution. This almost felt like a new band. The name of the album still reflected the band's satirical bent, a unit being a very common term for an album, especially when described in sales. The album cover reflected the shiny, cold and alienating feeling of the music inside. It was a shiny silver background with just a large yellow circle. There was no band name written on the sleeve, but it was a sticker on the jewel case. The artwork was devised by Janet and Kwan. This cover, with two simple shapes and two colours, won the ARIA Award for Best Album Cover. It's certainly memorable. And the award was given to their shared name, The Shits. The opening track on Unit, written by Eli, was called I Like Your Old Stuff Better Than Your New Stuff. The band's ability to stay in front of the bullshit around them hadn't slowed. They recorded a version of that song that was more guitar-driven pop rock, but it sounded too much like Regurgitator of old, so they re-recorded it with a synth effect on Ben's voice and played up the electronica elements. Here's the original I Like Your Old Stuff Better Than Your New Stuff, ultimately released as I Like Your Old Remix Better Than Your New Remix.
On my wall, I got your autographed underpants in my drawer. I'm always singing to your CD in my stereo. You see me smiling back.
here's the version that ended up on Unit. Emotionally and lyrically, the album was dominated by Kwan. Whereas 2Playing was an album addressing the outside world, Unit was Kwan looking at his inside world. Even that first single, Everyday Formula, hid Kwan's guilt about living in a first world country whilst people were starving. I Piss Alone, crass title aside, was all about Kwan's feelings of being in a masculine and aggressive world. His insecurities and anxieties were being turned into pop music. It wasn't just rallying against the malaggression of bands like Helmet and their fans. This was in Australia. Triple M pub rock was never far away. Kwan didn't want to be the good old bloke lead singer you could have a beer with. In fact, he was straight-edged and didn't drink at all. It comes together with exclamation mark, the song formerly known as. It was another song that was thoroughly rewritten a few times and initially sounded more like Prince. The album version keeps the Prince alluding name, but sort of becomes punk disco. It's a party song about not wanting to party. Released as a single, it made number 6 in the Hottest 100 of 1998, a career high. Here's Regurgitator with the song formerly known as. Unit was a huge success. It captured something of the time. There was that unease with technology, there was that irony, and dance music coming back after all these years of guitars, and the rise of Channel V and Recovery and the like, giving Australian bands an even bigger platform than ever before. Those animated film clips were everywhere, including being packaged with a new version of the album called Unit Rebooted, so I bought it twice. I don't think it was expected, but every single released would be a hit and the shelf life of the album would extend. The biggest one was the third single. Polyester Girl was probably the most novelty-sounding song on the album. It was a cheeky ode to a sex doll. But the big chorus and the silly song matter seemed to connect, and the song peaked at number 14 in the ARIA singles chart. The single would go gold, and it made it to number 26 in the Hottest 100 of 1998. It is the biggest hit of their career. Here's Polyester Girl by Regurgitator. Unit shifted a quarter of a million units all up. It was the third highest selling Australian album of 1998, following an Olivia Newton-John and John Farnham live album and Natalie Imbruglia's mega debut, Left of Middle. But with the success came work. The tour to accompany Unit featured the band wearing silver jumpsuits. They performed everywhere and they were joined by Shane Rudkin as a fourth member who played guitar. They toured with the Prodigy and TISM. They toured Europe, the US, the UK and Japan. After the unit tours, they took a break. Ben went on tour with Pangea, who finally released their debut album in 1997. They played Homebake in 1998. Here's one of their singles, Is Boys by Pangea. Juan and Janet made their own album in 1998. They changed their name from The Shits to the much nicer Happyland. They made one record of quirky pop called Welcome to Happyland. The single Don't You Know Who I Am charted in the singles chart at number 24. It had more of the 3D animated characters that they were creating on their computers in the artwork and their film clips. Here's the second single from Happyland, where Juan takes the lead vocals. Here's Happyland with Hello.
Hello, have you got something to say?
The balance of the band changed after Unit. Flushed with success, the band was suddenly empowered. They had achieved all this their way with no compromises. But it became clear that the band weren't all on the same page. Juan decided he didn't want to do long overseas tours anymore. It effectively ended their international career. Other bands in this period like UMI and Grinspoon and Super Jesus effectively moved overseas for months on end. Warner in the US were willing to do the same for Regurgitator and get Juan a house and pay any costs. But Juan said no. It wasn't what the other band members wanted to hear, but they accepted it. Then Juan decided he no longer wanted to record in the Dirty Room. The Dirty Room project had been spearheaded by Martin and he felt sidelined. Lee, along with Magoo and their long-serving sound guy Argonaut, had been preparing to set up a new Dirty Room for a new album. But Juan pushed for the album to be recorded elsewhere. They were working less together as a band. Martin also had an incident in Perth on the Unit tour. No one knows what happened, but Martin never returned from going out one night and was found unconscious. He was in a coma for a week. The band replaced him with Powderfingers drummer. John Coghill actually drummed for the band when they appeared on Recovery. But it hurt Martin that he was so easily replaced. The sessions for Album 3 started in Byron Bay, where they rented a house and set up their gear. But there were also sessions in Brisbane when Byron Bay didn't produce enough songs. Lee, for whatever reason, was not part of the creative process. Previously, the whole band came together to work up songs, but now he left Juan and Ben to work on their songs with Magoo. It doesn't sound like it was a happy situation. Ben remarked in an interview that Magoo was more a member of Regurgitator than Martin. The album, which would be called ...Art, was the first time the production credits were split. Juan is credited with producing his tracks. Ben is credited with producing his own tracks. There were guests like Cram from Spiderbait playing on one track. The first single was the poppy but sardonic Happiness. It made it to number 44 in the singles chart and number 62 in the Hottest 100 of 1999. It seemed familiar and Regurgitator. Here's Happiness by Regurgitator.
My brain once again, it's all
I would say that the album ...Art was liked but not loved. With no focus and little collaboration, the album was diverse and different. But Two Playing and Unit had a shared spirit and lyrical concerns. Art didn't push past the boundaries that they had already set. Some critics said that there were moments that sounded like Unit, and they said there were some moments that sounded like Two Playing. But they went a lot saying that this was Regurgitator breaking new ground again. And this is the problem of being a band that's known for breaking new ground. The album actually charted higher than Unit, making it to number 2, but it failed to sell even a quarter of what Unit did. Shortly after the album came out, Martin Lee left the band. He made one EP with a new band called The Boat Show with Matthew Strong from Custard, fronted by Glenn Lewis of Violetine on bass and vocals. But that band went nowhere, and that was it for Lee. He gave up music and left Australia. Here's Suckin' Sea by The Boat Show. I was heartbroken when Martin left, but apparently there were differences for years. Martin was more of a rock and punk drummer, and the other band members wanted to move away from that. Their later work would bear that out. It was also Martin's idea and instinct to buy gear and build a studio rather than hire one. Quan, on the other hand, wanted to be free to be creative, and recording in the same way every time ran counter to that. So what was Regurgitator now? I'm not sure the band knew either going into the next chapter. One more album followed on major label Warner, but this time with no Martin. The A&R guy Michael Parisi had also left. Touring member Shane left, and they also decided for the first time in their careers to not work with Magoo. The band wanted to go in another direction completely. Martin was replaced with a new drummer, Peter Kostick, the drummer from Front End Loader, but he wouldn't appear on the album's cover. He felt more like a touring member, for now. Again, Quan and Ben worked on and recorded their song parts individually at their respective homes. They travelled to London to work with producer Andy Gill, the legendary guitarist from Gang of Four. He would be the first new human to make creative decisions on Regurgitator music since the band started. The album they made was called Eduardo and Rodriguez Wage War on T-Rex, released in 2001. After the short and snappy titles of their previous albums, it was a bit of a mouthful. The singles showed that Regurgitator was still able to craft catchy and fun radio hits. Ben's Fat Cop was released as the first single. Quan's Super Straight was the second. Both made the Hottest 100 of 2001. But they were no longer a big deal for Warners. Regurgitator, for their part, didn't like being on a major label anymore. They agreed to part ways. The obligatory contractual obligation best of called Jingles was released in 2002. Here's Super Straight by Regurgitator. Bands around this time dropped quietly from view. Ben and Quan did just that. Ben started a family, and Quan, whose relationship with Janet ended, travelled the world for 18 months. And that could have been it for Regurgitator. There might have never been anything else, because the options they had were going back to just relying on their fan base and pumping out similar records to keep going, or breaking up. But Regurgitator had to go and do something different, didn't they? Regurgitator's manager Paul Curtis had the idea of band in a bubble for many years, but in the early 2000s he could really see a way to make it work. The invention of shows like Big Brother and cheap web cameras meant that the idea of building a bubble somewhere where someone was filmed all the time was not impossible. Other bands had also started using rudimentary webcams to film their time in studios, something that the internet made possible. What was new was putting a band in a bubble. Regurgitator's recordings in Thailand, the Dirty Room and Byron Bay were not dissimilar to making music in a bubble. For Kwan, he was initially hesitant, but then he saw magician David Blaine live in a glass box above the Thames in London for 44 days. Kwan thought it would have been good if he did something with his time in that box. So the band went about making an album in an utterly insane way. The so-called bubble was set up in Federation Square, a busy tourist spot in Melbourne. It was a custom-built recording studio slash barracks. It was surrounded by clear walls so people could just watch them record. They were also live streamed on a pay TV channel 24 hours a day. There was a hatch for food. People could talk to the band on a microphone set up outside. It was hideously bright because of the cameras. The band went into the bubble on the 24th of August 2004. It was the three members of Regurgitator, plus Magoo and an engineer. They also had Jabba, a VJ from Channel V. Over the next 3 weeks, the band recorded an album. No human being watched the whole thing, but I watched a bit of it here and there. I knew friends who went down to Fed Square to have a look. It was a fun thing that was going on. I don't know if there's a better band than Regurgitator for this. They were a band that valued the process and liked to have their backs against the wall. When it was over, the band looked exhausted but smiling. Jabba, not someone who had ever recorded an album before, looked like he wanted to die. Sadly, the thing about Band in a Bubble, as a concept, was that the setup overshadows anything they make. The album they made was called Mishmash, released just 2 months after the band exited the bubble, but sadly the hype was already gone. Having spent so much time hearing about Regurgitator, the last thing I needed from them was new music. Kwan would later say that the experience for him was the making of it, not the album that came out. Band in a Bubble actually had a US version. Every now and again I hear someone say that they should revive it in this era of live streaming. They'd need to freshen it up and find the right band, but I admit, I'd still be interested. The big single from Mishmash was The Drop. It's fun, if not very deep. And the band still play it. Here's The Drop by Regurgitator. The band continued on after that. They released albums on their manager's label, Valve. They would record in Brazil and Hong Kong. They would make a kids' album. They released an album as a play button, a USB rechargeable badge that you could plug your headphones into. Why not? They just continued to be unpredictable. In 2024, just by chance, Kwan and Martin bumped into each other in a shop. Martin was visiting Australia from Mexico, and they took the time to catch up and talk for a couple of hours. They hadn't spoken in 20 years. Regurgitator also made a new album in 2024 called Invader. It got rave reviews across the board. Here's This Is Not a Pop Song by Regurgitator, and it features Peaches. It goes bang, 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 inside your head. It goes bang, 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 till you fall down dead. It goes bang, 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 inside your head. It goes bang, 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 till you fall down dead. This is a pop song. It's not a lot song. It make you hot song. So take your socks off. It's weird Regurgitator even exists. It was this magic moment, a few years on from Nirvana, when the doors were opened because the majors wanted to find the next Nirvana. They found heaps of Nirvana clones, but some weird and interesting stuff was let in as well. That major label Warner Music was signing a band like this, and letting them put out 18 minutes of singles was something that could only happen in the mid-90s. 2 years earlier and 2 years later, no way. Having been accidentally allowed in the door, Regurgitator started smashing the place up a bit. Their music spanned so much ground. So much of it was fun. A lot of it still sounds modern. You could release the song formerly known as today. But that's not what sticks with me. What sticks with me is their attitude. I loved how they kicked commercialism, or toxic masculinity, or the sycophantic music industry, or indie kids who liked old stuff. They had a good bullshit radar, and they taught Aussie kids how to tune in. They were also different kind of men. They were multicultural, and they didn't want to just stay in Australia. Ben was covered in tattoos. They didn't care to be rock stars or lived in rock star glamour, but they weren't afraid to sound heavy. They were punk, they were hip-hop, they were hardcore. They just carried themselves differently. I was a Chinese teenager who loved indie rock in the 90s, so make no bones about it, I wanted to be in a band like Regurgitator. We would be wild and modern and not take part in the old boy larrikin crowd. I wanted to be a man like the members of Regurgitator. Basically, they weren't just good, they were inspiringly good. And that Asian representation can't be understated. Also, these days, I'd rather dance in ugly pants in a lounge room as well. Hidden under the thick distortion and irony, I love Yeoman's search for meaning in a cold and meaningless world. Ben did it at times as well, but songs like Everyday Formula and Just Another Beautiful Story were deeply personal. I love that this silly, fuzzy pop-punk music seemed to be grappling with huge philosophical ideas. Kwan in particular was trying to work out the world and shared it with us in his songs. His view of the world sometimes seemed cold, but he was looking for warmth. And he and the band that he was in with Ben, Martin and Pete were nice enough to take us along. To end, from their smash hit album Unit, here's Just Another Beautiful Story by Regurgitator. Thanks for listening to this week's Just Ace and welcome to the end bit. This is the bit where podcasts end with stuff about how to support the podcast. It all helps with the time, the production, and keeping this podcast ad-free. This week I want to talk about the social media stuff. One of the really easy, no-cost ways to help the podcast is to follow me on social media. Look, the internet is all algorithms, and the more follows and the more posts are recommended, the more you help me spread the word. The main platforms I'm on are Facebook and Instagram. You will also find show notes for every episode on those two platforms and the odd unintrusive update. And look, that's just the way the world is now. People judge projects like this by social media numbers. And good social media numbers help me spread the word. That's it. So you can follow along to help in an easy, no-cost way. The handle everywhere is at JustAce90s, which is JustAce90s. I've also started putting up old episodes on YouTube. There's also lots of video playlists on YouTube as well. Let me parrot every other YouTuber and say, leave a like or subscribe to the channel. It all helps. Of course, there's also the Patreon and the tipping service, Buy Me a Coffee. There's also the new book, which adapts the first two seasons, and you can buy merch on Redbubble. All those links are in the description. Other ways to help out that doesn't cost a thing is to leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or Amazon, or simply tell a friend. That's it. Next week, 1996, and we look at bands that made great music that year.
Hello, music lovers. My name's Nathan Jolly. I'm the host of Listen Carefully, a weekly podcast where every Saturday morning I talk to a different musician about their lives in and around music.
We'll have all contemporary music fans singing Yay Ha.
Search for Listen Carefully with Nathan Jolly wherever you listen to podcasts.